The parasha is Parashat Vayechi. You have your source sheets in front of you. Here we are, we're coming to the end of Sefer Bereshit. And don't be concerned about the fact that there are two sheets today, four sides to the source sheets. I don't know, it's just in one of those moods that I started pasting all sorts of stuff on, and I don't know how much we'll need some of it, but maybe not all of it. No, they can look in together. They can look in. We'll just have to know to make more for next week. You most probably want me to tell them to put off, extinguish their cell phones. Please, if you have a cell phone and it's on, please turn it off. It's extremely jarring just as I come to the crescendo of the shiur. Then a cell phone goes off. And chances are that it's a wrong number. All right. What I want to focus on this morning are the harsh words that Yaakov Avinu at the end of his life says to Shimon and Levi. He gathers all of his children together. He tells them, "Hey, osvu v'agidu lachem, gather around and I will tell you what's going to happen to you at the end of days." And Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are really, in a sense, attacked and chastised very, very, very strongly by their father Yaakov. But I want to focus on Shimon and Levi. First, we'll read the Psukim. Number one, Shimon v'Levi Yachin. This is Yaakov speaking. Shimon and Levi are brothers. Klei chomos mechedosehem. The weapons of violence. The weapons of violence are that which they act with. Besodom al tavo nafshi. In their secret councils, I don't want to be there. Bekahalam, when they gather together, al teichad kivodi, let not my honor be there. Ki bi'apam hargu ish, because in their anger they killed a man, ubiritzonam, and it was their will that ikru shor, they uprooted the oxen. And he concludes by saying, arur apam ki oz, cursed is their anger because it is mighty, the evrosam, and their wrath, ki kashotha, because it's difficult, and therefore, achalkein bi Yaakov, vafitzein bi Yisrael, I'm going to divide them out, apportion them out in Yaakov, and I will disperse them in Israel. Quite a frontal attack. And these are supposed to be the brachos that Yaakov Avinu blesses his children at the end of his life. There may very well be, and we're going to have to search for it, there may very well be some kind of a blessing involved in this, but otherwise it seems to be an attack against them. And the attack is most probably the result of the fact that Yaakov Avinu is condemning them for the Shechem massacre. Years earlier, I don't know how many years, it's a long time ago, when Hamor and Shechem had taken Dina captive, kidnapped her, because she had been raped by Shechem. And they go in, and Shimon and Levi are the ones who massacre the city of Shechem. We're going to have to take a look at what it is that Yaakov Avinu says to them at the time of the massacre, and what does he say to them now, many, many years later, on his deathbed. What did he say to them yet then? So right next to it, number four. Vayoma Yaakov el Shimon el Levi. This is back in Parshat Vayishlach. The massacre is over. Remember, there had been a deal made between the brothers and the people of Shechem that they're going to circumcise themselves, and then there's going to be, in a sense, free trade and intermarriage between the family of Yaakov and the family of Shechem. And of course the Torah says that when they came up with this deal, it was all done with wisdom. In other words, they were acting with wisdom, a smart way of deceiving the people of Shechem into thinking that they want to make peace with them and really live side by side, and everybody's going to live happily ever after. And of course that was not their intention. Now what was their intention? We're going to see that the Ramban says the intention of the brothers was that the people of Shechem will be weakened by virtue of the fact that they have circumcised themselves, so they'll be able to go into the city and pull an entebbe and they'll get Dina out safely. Because never lose sight of the fact that while they are negotiating there in Parshat Vayishlach, Yaakov and the brothers, his children, are negotiating with Hamor and Shechem, they are negotiating under fire, because Dina is being held captive the whole time in the city of Shechem. They haven't brought Dina back and said, well, here's Dina, now let's talk about how we can enter into some kind of a relationship so that Shechem can marry Dina. This is negotiation under fire, under the gun. There aren't too many choices left to Yaakov and his children. They know that she is being held. The Ramban is going to say that the intention of the idea that they will be circumcised and then we're going to have a deal, they certainly never intended that it's going to be living happily ever after, and they would have the Yishuvim, you know, like Yitzhar and Tapuach, half Shechemites and half Israelites. No. And they'd have schools of Shechemniks and you know, Mitnachalimniks. There was nobody that had any intention whatsoever of that sort. They wanted nothing to do with these people, but it was a ploy in order to weaken them so that they can come in, take Dina, and go. It's Shimon Velevi, of course, who are the ones that go into the city and commit the massacre. We're going to have to see, what about the moral issues involved? Are there moral issues involved? It seems now at the end of his life, Yaakov Avinu seems to be saying, yes, there's something very, very seriously wrong with what you did. Arurapam, he curses their anger and their wrath. He wants no part of them. Well, then we're going to have a problem. Why doesn't he condemn the immorality of the act at the time? What does Yaakov say at the time? So there's the pasuk, Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon vel Levi. Yaakov said to Shimon and Levi, Achartem oti, you have made me confused, blurred, lahavisheni, to make me noisome. I smell b'yoshev har, it's in the presence of the inhabitants of the land. Baknani ubaprizi, you've made me an object of disgust before the Knani and the Prizi. Vani mitei mispar, I'm just a few people. We're not a big family. We're not a nation. The Nesfualai, they will gather against me, v'hikuni, and they will smite me, v'nishmadati, and I will be destroyed. Ani ubeiti, I and my family. This is what Yaakov says to them. And then, of course, comes the great response. And this will also be something that we're going to discuss. The great response, Vayomru, they said, Hachazona yaseh sachosenu, will we permit somebody to treat our sister like a harlot? This is what we're going to permit? We're going to have to see, is this a roar of strength? Or is it possibly no more than a whimper? Who's right? One of the keys, of course, in understanding all of this is going to be this pasuk. But the question on the pasuk is, we don't hear a word from Yaakov condemning the absolute immorality. You went in and you killed out of city men, women, and children, innocent people. They weren't combatants who inadvertently were killed. You went in and did it. Shouldn't Yaakov Avinu, who is going to be the father of Klal Yisrael, stand up and sound the clarion call of condemnation? We can, of course, understand that there is condemnation on his deathbed, but there was no condemnation at the time. So then we had better try to understand why does he not condemn them for the abject, absolute ugliness and immorality of the act. And what does he say? It seems to be an extremely selfish response. Me, you know, we're going to be hurt, they're going to attack us. All of Yaakov's sense of ethics, of right and wrong, should have come out. But it doesn't. It doesn't. And here at the end, we finally hear something that certainly sounds like a moral condemnation. We're going to have another problem. If the role is said and done, Shimon and Levi were great people. There is nothing that should indicate to us that these were simply absolute killers and then bloodthirsty. The fact is that they do say, "Hachazona yasas achoseinu," and we were talking about a terrible crime had been committed against the family of Yaakov. A terrible crime. Now, if it's morally and ethically wrong, how is it possible, and Ramban is going to ask this question, how is it possible that tzaddikim go ahead and act this way? So we're going to see that Ramban is going to deal with the Ramban. The Ramban has a very clear approach. The Rambam is number 5. The Rambam says, "V'keitzad mitzuvin heim al hadinim." The Rambam is talking about the Noachide laws, the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. B'nei Noach have a 7 mitzvot, and one of their mitzvot is dinim, a judicial system. So the Rambam asks, "In what way have I commanded al hadinim?" So the Rambam says, "Chayovin lahoshiv dayonin v'shoftin b'chol pelech v'felech." It is their responsibility to establish courts and judges in every region, in every area of the world. Ladon b'sheish mitzvot elu, that they should judge their people. Are they adhering to the 6 other mitzvahs that they were given? Ulahaz hiratam, and to warn them. A ben Noach who has transgressed any one of the 7 commandments, Yehorek Basayef, is supposed to be put to death by the sword. And here the Rambam throws in, "Umipnezeh nitchayvu kol balei Shechem hadigod." Therefore, all of the people of Shechem were in fact guilty in a manner that what they deserved was the death penalty. Nitchayvu kol balei Shechem hadiga, sharei Shechem gozal. Shechem stole. He stole a human being, and they knew about it. The people of Shechem knew about it. Nobody objected. Nobody lifted a voice. Nobody lifted a finger to do anything about it. Then they all become guilty as partners in this crime. V'hem ro'u, they saw. V'yodu, they knew about it. V'lo donuhu, and they didn't judge them. The Rambam takes a very, very clear position. There was nothing immoral or unethical about what Shimon and Levi did. Because here is a city where a crime was committed, and it's the responsibility of people to speak up. You can't remain silent. It was their responsibility, according to law, to haul Shem into court and judge him for what he did. And the fact is that Shechem is supposed to get the death penalty for having done it. He kidnapped Dina and he raped her. And nobody said anything. So, according to the Rambam, there is simply nothing immoral at all. Absolutely nothing immoral at all. Nothing. The Ramban is going to ask on the the Ramban is going to ask on the Rambam if there's nothing unethical or immoral. So why does Yaakov condemn them at the end of his life? What's he condemning their anger? You know what he should be doing? He should be telling them, Shimon and Levi, what a job you did. Yes, Yashikayach, you did a great job. It was terrific. That's just what we needed at the time. Somebody had to go out there and defend the honor of Klal Yisrael. And you did it. You did it. So, according to the Rambam, you better remember all the questions that we ask. I always tell you, I start going off and asking all sorts of questions, and by the end of time I'm wrapping up, I may forget to answer some of the questions. So it's your responsibility. Okay. Now that you're sufficiently nervous and tense. Okay. So that's the that's part of the problem here. So we're asking, on the one hand, we're really asking contradictory questions. We're asking, on the one hand, why doesn't he condemn the immorality of the act immediately at the time? And then we tell you that the Rambam says there was nothing unethical or immoral about it. On the contrary, they were doing the right thing. If so, then the question becomes, why does Yaakov condemn them at the end of his life? So let's see what the Ramban has to say. Don't be concerned about the fact that we're jumping around. Number three, down at the bottom of the page. This is the Ramban here in Parashat Vayechi. There's something about the beginning of this outburst of Yaakov against Shimon and Levi that seems to be complementary. How does it begin? Shimon the Levi Achim. Shimon and Levi are brothers. So the Ramban says, first he says that they have similar personality. Like, you can tell that these two are cut from the same cloth. Then, V'hanochon be'enai, down at the bottom, in the middle of the first sentence, V'hanochon be'enai, what seems correct in my eyes, she'omar, ki Shimon v'Levi achim gemurim domim umit achim zelazeh ba'atzatam u'bema'aseyem. He says that Shimon and Levi, see, very interesting, the word ach means a brother, and the word ach means something which is absolutely perfectly connected. I'll tell you where the word is used. The halacha is, if somebody loses a parent, so you're supposed to tear kriya. The halacha is, that tearing of kriya, eino mitache la'olam. You're never permitted to reweave it to the garment as though there never was a tear in the garment. Eino mitacher. Because the word mitacher means to take two things and make them absolutely similar. So the Ramban says these two fellas are absolutely alike in the counsel and the ideas they took and what they did. Uklar pirashti. And we're going to look at that as well. I have already explained that Ki Yaakov Kotzach al Shimon v'Levi, Yaakov got angry with Shimon and Levi b'horgam anshei ha'ir when they killed the people of the city, b'avur she'asu chamas. We're going to see now the Ramban's position, where he disagrees with the Ramban. The Ramban has said, of course, that it was ethical and it was moral to do what they did, because Balei Shechem, the people of Shechem, deserved the death penalty. Because they were a lawless society. And that Torah gave to Bnei Noach a mitzvah that their society has to be a lawful one. And they were lawless. And therefore they deserved What happened to them? The Ramban takes a position completely different than the Ramban. And the Ramban's position, he says, I've already explained in Parsha Vayishlach, that Yaakov got angry with Shimon and Levi when they killed the people of the city, Bavrush, Asu, Hamas, because they did something that was violence. According to the Ramban, it's because we can understand what it is that Yaakov Avinu was saying there. Because it was an act of violence. It was wrong. It was immoral. It was evil. Ki heim lo chotu lahem klal. Ubo bebrit v'nimolu. Take a look, you know, a completely different way of looking at it. The Ramban says, what do you want from the people of the city? The people of the city had entered into a covenant with the children of Yaakov, and they circumcised themselves. V'yoshuvu al Hashem, v'yu kulam b'chlal anshei beis Avram. What an approach, the Ramban says. There was a missed opportunity over here. You know, these guys, Shimon and Levi, never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Right? Okay. How many takeoffs have there been on other events? Never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. These people, the people of Shechem, God bless them, had entered into a covenant with the Jewish people. They could have been one with us. They would have been part of the house of Avraham. Do you understand? A completely different approach that's taken by the Ramban. That here we could have friends, we could have allies, we could have people who are going to learn the lessons of Yahadut, and they just went ahead and, you know, no pun intended, they killed it all. There's nobody around left anymore to do anything with. Completely different approach of the Ramban. V'yashuvu al Hashem, they'll do tshuva, v'yu kulam b'chlal anshei beit Avram, and all of them are going to be part of the house of Avram. And you know in what category they're going to be? Min ha-nefesh asher osu b'choram. Just as Avram and Sarah had created souls for God in Choram, that's how the Ramban sees the people of Shechem could have been. Vod chorolo, another thing that angered him, shelo yomru ki biatsoso nasa hadovar. There's something else that bothers Yaakov. What bothers Yaakov is he doesn't want that people accuse him of having been the guilty party, that he really wanted this to happen, and they were acting on his behalf. That he didn't want. Because Yaakov sees himself as a spiritual leader of the generation. And if he is such, how will people listen to him if he is guilty either directly or indirectly, or certainly suspected of being directly involved in an absolutely immoral act? You're giving me a bad name. Od chorolo, he was angry, shelo yomru. They shouldn't say ki biatzato nasa hadavar. It was with his advice that this was done. The Yechil Hashem will be a desecration of God's name. Sheyasa hanavi chomos v'shod, that the Navi Yaakov is the prophet, should commit an act of violence and theft. Uses chomos v'shod because, remember, the violence, of course, is that the people of Shechem were killed. The shod is that they took off with all of the wealth of the city of Shechem. V'zeh tam, and that's why Yaakov Avinu says here, and here we're going to see a completely different approach between the Ramban and Rashi. It's amazing just to watch the way Gedolei Yisrael learned Pshat in a pasuk. B'sodom al tovo nafshi, the pasuk says. The second pasuk of here. B'sodom al tovo nafshi, b'koholom al teichad kivodi. In their council, my soul shall not be. B'koholom, when they gather, al teichad kivodi. Rashi's approach, it looks pretty frightening, that big Rashi over there. So I'll read it. You can find it. It's about 12, 13 lines down. B'sodom al tovo nafshi. In a word, Rashi says that Yaakov is telling them, I don't want to be part of that where you gather together. I don't want to be part of Shimon and Levi. And he's talking about being part of Shimon and Levi in the future. Zeh ma'aseh zimri, kishenizkabtzu shifto shel Shimon lahaviyat hamidyanit lifnei Moshe. He says, later on in history, the story of Zimri, who was from the tribe of Shimon, when his whole tribe gathered together to bring the Midianite woman before Moshe, and they said to him, Zu asura o muteret, is this woman prohibited or permitted? Im tomer asura, Moshe, if you tell us that she is prohibited, bat Yitro mihitira lecha, who was it that permitted you to marry the daughter of Yitro? Al yizochar shmi batova. Yaakov even says, I don't want to be mentioned, I don't want my name mentioned there, shenema. And it says over there at the end of Parshat Balak, beginning of Parshat Pinchas, Zimri ben Salu, who was the prince of the house of Shimon, never calls him ben Yaakov. Doesn't call him the son of Yaakov. Yaakov says, I want no part of that. B'kaholam, kishayakil Korach, when Korach is going to gather his people together for a rebellion against Moshe, and Korach is from what tribe? He is from the tribe of Levi. So Yaakov Avinu on his deathbed says, I want no part of it. And you know what happens over there? It says, Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi. It does not say ben Yaakov. So according to Rashi, Yaakov Avinu was saying later on, when you're going to do terrible things, both Shimon and Levi, I want no part of it. Leave me out. One of the clear meteorological signs that winter has arrived, I have my first sore throat. I don't have to wait to find out that they're predicting snow for Friday. Are they predicting snow? I can believe Rabbi Adler when he said that. Maybe in Ramot, but I didn't hear about Arnof. All right, we'll see. But I'll tell you, we're all little children. You don't want to see some snow. Those are the two things that I miss. Being in Eretz Yisrael, two things that I miss. It's not mayonnaise anymore, and it's not tuna fish, and garnish. I don't need any of that. But the trees changing colors in autumn, and snowflakes. You talk about somebody comes from Long Island, you understand? I'm not from Brooklyn, where one tree changed colors. A tree grows in Brooklyn. What are you? Isn't there a book, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn? All right. You don't remember. What's your knowledge of literature? Right. What are you going to do? A lozenge? Okay, all right. Okay. The approach of Rashi is that Yaakov Avinu is saying, I don't want to be mentioned when you people are going to go out and do further acts of violence. Later on, when Shimon is going to do something ugly, when Zimri and Cosby Basur, doesn't say Ben Yaakov. When Korach is going to rebel, it doesn't say Korach is Ben Yaakov. The Ramban takes a completely different approach. The Ramban's approach is that Yaakov, from the time of the massacre in Shechem, was concerned that he shouldn't be blamed for it, because that will be a Chilul Hashem. That the great man Yaakov may either have been involved actively or passively in this ugly act of the massacre of Shechem. So I don't want that. Therefore the Ramban says, V'zeh tam, that's why he says, line 6, B'sodom al tovo nafshi, hit natzlut. He's excusing himself. Shelo hoyo b'sodom ba'anotam v'mirma. It's a fascinating grammatic switch that he's making. Even though b'sodom al tovo nafshi u'b'kaholam al teichat kivodi is written in future tense, he says it can also be understood as meaning, I never wanted to be part of it. I don't want anybody seeing me as having been part of that. he's excusing himself that he was not there. He had nothing to do with their decision. He was not part of that community of Shimon and Levi when they came against the city and killed him. Therefore, he curses upon their anger and their wrath. And what was it? Because they destroyed a city with Tapam and Nishayim. All right. That's part one of the Ramban. On the other side, here is of course, a much more formidable Ramban that I as well say shouldn't scare you. Shouldn't scare you. We're only going to have time to to take part of it. Line one, where it's underlined, the Eshkan Sheila, there's a question that has to be asked here. This is the Ramban in Parsha Vayishlach at the time of the Shimon and Levi massacre. The Eshkan Sheila Shahadavan Nid Eki Biritzon Aviha Ubat Sato Anu Kilafonav Hoyu Vuhu Ayodea Ma'ane Kibimirma Yadabedu. I'm reading this because this in a sense strengthens the words of the Ramban. The question is, when the brothers were talking with Shechem and Hamor, the father was there. He was part of these negotiations. He knows that the negotiations are an act of deceit and trickery. He was there. How can he say that he is innocent of this? Yaakov, you were sitting there. You heard them say, go ahead and circumcise yourselves. So the Ramban, of course, is going to explain, as we have said, that the intention was simply to remove Dina from the house of Shechem without any opposition. So he goes on to say, Vim Kane, Loma Kos. If he's sitting there and he's part of the negotiations, why does he get angry? Vod, Shalom Yitachin, it can't be. Can you imagine a father who's going to agree that his daughter should marry the fellow who violated and defiled her so violently? How? All of the brothers answered with deceit. The brothers spoke with deceit. But Shimon and Levi went out and did the act. All that the father did was curse their anger. This is another important point. Shimon and Levi are not being cursed. Their anger is being cursed. Their wrath is being cursed. Yaakov is not rejecting Shimon and Levi outright. He's telling them that they have a character and personality trait that could be destructive. Could it also be constructive? Can it be important? Can it be something of great value? We're going to see in a moment. Anger isn't always bad. Wrath isn't always evil. We'll see that. Then in the course of his words, the Ramban brings the words of the Rambam, as we pointed them out. Machloket Rambam and Ramban. According to Rambam, the city of Shechem deserved to be destroyed. According to the Ramban, they could have turned out to be great Balei Tshuva, you understand? Great Balei Tshuva. And then again, further, the Ramban asks another question on the Rambam. If you want to find fault with the people of Shechem, we're talking about people who are idol worshippers. Idol worship is also prohibited under the aegis of the seven Noahide mitzvot. If you want to talk about sins and crimes that they had committed against the halach of the seven mitzvot, but they know there were many. The only thing is, the Ramban says, it's not their responsibility. You don't always have to be the one who carries out God's wrath. The Rebbe can take care of that himself. He can take care of himself. So let me tell you how I read what is taking place over here. All we have to do is go back to the to that pasuk in number 4. And I'm surprised, we talked about this some years ago, and I'm always thinking, someplace I got to find this in the Mefarshim, and then I have this, I sort of feel a little good when I don't find it in one of the Mefarshim, which means, not bad. Maybe we came up with something that nobody else thought about. But that could happen. Lightning does strike once, twice in a lifetime. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ben Levi, number 4, when Yaakov speaks to them at the time. This sentence, I believe, is so unusual. There's something about it that you have to sit up and take notice. Okay, it took me about 40, 50 years to sit up and take notice. Take a look at this pasuk. Acharta moti. You have made me confused. Lahav isheni. There must be a nicer English translation, sort of, they dislike me. B'yoshev ha'aretz, amongst the inhabitants of the land. Baktani u'baprizi. V'ani metei mizbar. And I'm just a few people. V'nesfu alai. And they're going to gather against me. V'ikuni. And they're going to smite me. V'nishmadati ani u'beiti. I and my house are going to be destroyed. There's one problem here in this pasuk. If Yaakov wants to tell Shimon the Levi you did something terrible. I'm trying to think of a nice example. When somebody has a complaint about something, so usually, a lot of people are complaining that it's too hot in here. The truth is, nobody's complaining except you. But you don't like to say that it's too hot in me. Oh boy, a lot of people are talking about it. Somebody will come over to his rabbi and say, the people are complaining that the sermon is too long. All over there talking. The truth is, very often, you start questioning and you find out, you'll put him up against the wall and you find out it's just him. That's all. But people don't like to come and say, I'm complaining. We always like to make things, everybody. I mean, we're living in the day and age of the polls. Not in 35% of the people want this. 53% of the people want this. That way it sounds much better. It may very well be that the entire poll is one big lie, but if you're going to lie already, you do it well. You do it well. And you create a poll that says so many people are so upset. So I remember in the early years of my ministry in the rabbinate, I used to take these things seriously until I started finding out, what are you talking about, they wanted me to speak even longer. I didn't do it. But that's the way it is. You don't like to be, one conceals their own complaint and by making it part of a much larger complaint. If Yaakov Avinu wants to tell Shimon and Levi that they have endangered. Who have they endangered? Everybody. Everybody. The whole family. Why is this pasuk all in first person singular and no less than 8 times? I don't think there's another pasuk in Tanakh like this. I'll tell you how the pasuk should have been said. Acharta otanu. Lahav ishenu, b'yoshev ha'adetz b'knaniu, v'anachnu, we are just few. V'nesfu aleinu, they're going to gather against us. V'hikunu, they're going to smite us. V'nishmadnu, when we're going to be destroyed. Anachnu batenu, we and all of our children. And by the way, if he would have said it in the plural, he would have been saying the truth. Isn't it strange that Yaakov Avinu, why does he do that? Wouldn't it have greater impact on Shimon Levi and say, take a look what you did to everybody? Oh, the Einiklech and the Ur Einiklech and the brothers and the sisters, the cousins, everybody. And you did it on your own. I believe that what Yaakov Avinu is telling Shimon and Levi is, even if it's only me, you don't have the right to take unilateral action when it may affect one other person. Who gave you the right? It makes no difference. Kamus, the number of people, doesn't make any difference whether you have endangered 1,000 people or you've endangered one person. We as a family sat down to talk about it. We as a family negotiated. And as a family that negotiates, as a family who's facing a crisis, any action that's going to be taken has to be by the family. Who gave you the right to act on your own? Forgive me, I can't help it. But my best examples always come from real circumstances. Who gave the people in Oslo 10 years ago the right, unbeknownst to anybody in this country, to negotiate our lives away? Who gave them the right? And to present us with a fait accompli, and that's it. Who? It was against the law. Who gave you the right? Who gives the right to people who are now floating around the world, financed by the European Union, and they're negotiating, and they're writing papers, and they're making all sorts of concessions? Who gave Barak and Balin the permission, after he had no government, to go to Taba and give away who knows what? Who gave you the right? I'm going to use a dirty word. This is a democrat, yeah. You can't do anything like this in a democracy. Yaakov Avinu is telling them, there's law and order in this family. Nobody has the right to act unilaterally. Even if all you're doing is you're endangering one person, me, you can't act for me on your own. It may very well be even that if we would have discussed it, there may have been a decision in the family that these chevre, let's wipe them off the face of the earth. But you know when that can be done? When we sit down and we talk about it. You don't have the right. It's destructive. It's destructive for the whole fabric of family. And here, when we talk about family, we're really talking about the Jewish state to be, the society as a whole. Yaakov Avinu isn't really telling them, right? Yesh din v'yesh dayan? Now, of course, Shimon v'Levi, after they heard this, most probably under other circumstances, they just would have changed parties and go to another party. If you're thrown out democratically from one party, so well, the system, democracy doesn't work because it's hurt me, so I'll go find myself another party. They just had no place where to go to. The only place would have been Shechem, and they wiped out Shechem. For years, I had thought that when Shimon and Levi respond to their father and say, "Hachesona ya'aseh sachoseinu," that this was the great roar of people who are speaking for ethics and morality and family and patriotism. You know what I think it is? It's the whimper of a few wounded fellows who finally have been put in their place. As though they're pleading, It doesn't ring with that power and that light of Hachazono Yasas Hachoseinu. I went through two periods in life. One where I saw Hachazono Yasas Hachoseinu as being a great, great, powerful, emotional response to the Father. And then I believe that Yaakov Avinu doesn't even have to respond after that. There are those who ask, why does he remain silent after they've said Hachazono Yasas Hachoseinu? It leaves the impression as though he's agreeing with them. I'm saying it's not a matter that he's agreeing with them, because they haven't made a statement that's morally or ethically meaningful in the circumstances here. It's a whimper. Hachazono Yasas Hachoseinu. All right, so now we know what took place there. What's taking place now on Yaakov Avinu's deathbed? With our pshat in the pasuk, and here we're going to say a number of answers on the questions that we've asked. Now Yaakov is going to speak about the moral and ethical issues. I don't believe that then was the time to talk about moral and ethical issues. I don't think that Shimon and Levi were even capable of hearing or understanding the moral or ethical issues involved, if there are such as there are according to the Rambam. There's a time to talk ethics and morality, and there's a time to talk democracy and basic, good, decent policy. What Yaakov Avinu has to tell them at the time is, you cannot act unilaterally. You don't have the right. Because that to him is most important now. We're going to have to live together for the rest of our lives, and we're going to have to know how to live together, and that means we're living in a democratic society. Nobody has the right to do anything on their own. You haven't been given permission by the body politic to do it. Oh, but there's a time for morality. There's a time for morality. The time for morality is when Yaakov Avinu is on his deathbed. And even so, according to the Ramban, we're dividing. There's something that Yaakov Avinu in his wisdom tells them at the time, and there's something else that he tells them before he dies. There's something else that's very important here, and we can never lose sight of this. Even according to the Rambam, that morally and ethically they were absolutely right to go in and destroy the city of Shechem. But there's something that has happened in the intervening years. There's something that happened. Yosef. Who were the ones that wanted to kill Yosef? Shimon and Levi. Now at the end of his life, certainly according to Rashi, that he knows that they wanted to kill Yosef. Now we can turn to them and say, it may very well be that in the longer view of history, your massacre of Shechem was not so much Hachizono Yaseh Sachuseinu. Why didn't you rise up and cry out, Hacheebed Naseh Sachinu? Where were you then? The Hachizono Yaseh Sachuseinu becomes even less than a whimper. It becomes absolutely hypocritical. The big fellows who talk about Hachazona Yasas Achoseinu, and they're ready to kill their brother Yosef, and certainly acquiesce in his being sold into slavery. Oh, is there a contradiction over here? That's why Yaakov Avinu on his deathbed curses their anger and their wrath. It's not as holy as one could have thought at the time of Shechem. And it's not as holy as you thought that it would be at the time of Shechem. You thought you're telling these stories about standing up for morality and the family. What won't we do for the family? Our sister's not going to be treated like that. But you were ready to treat your own brother even worse. Number three, not on the sheet. Number three and what's going on in my head. (Clears throat) what he doesn't say at the time, he has to say now. You know why he has to say it now? Just as he has to condemn Reuven. Reuven is condemned for having been hasty, done something he shouldn't have done. They're being condemned, certainly according to the way I'm learning Pshat in that great pasuk. Yaakov Avinu on his deathbed is laying the foundations for the Jewish state. What's going to come immediately after Shimon and Levi? Yehuda, Ata Yoducha, your brothers are going to be the ones who are going to follow you. Yehuda is now going to be granted Malchus. And you know what Yaakov Avinu understands? Remember, who are the ones who would have seen themselves first in line to be king? Reuven, Shimon, Levi. All of them are flawed. So Yaakov has to point out to each one the flaw, the fatal flaw that makes them incapable of being kings. And more than that, they're going to have to know that when there is a king, they bow before the authority of the king. You can't do anything unilaterally anymore. You can't permit yourself the liberty of letting your anger pour out all over. Because there's going to be a state with law and order. And that state, Yehuda is going to be Melech. And when Yehuda is Melech, that means everybody looks toward him. Incidentally, of course, there's another issue that we can't go into now, but basically the issue is that there is going to come a point in history where Levi is going to move into the position of kingship. Chanukah, the time of the Chashmonaim, Kohanim from the tribe of Levi become kings for 200 years. So here also there's going to be a great machloket between the Ramban and the Rambam. I have that Ramban here, we're not going to get to it, where the Ramban says that the kingdom that was established by the Chashmonaim was a sinful one, because a Kohen is not permitted to be a king. There's a complete separation of leadership in Klal Yisrael. King is one thing, Kohen is another. The Rambam, of course, and we learned that Rambam a few weeks ago, the Rambam in a festive manner says at the beginning of the laws of Hanukkah that kingdom returned to Israel for more than 200 years. The Rambam holds that there was nothing wrong with Kohanim or Levim becoming kings, and of course that's a much larger issue. The only thing we can say about it at this point is that they can be kings for a limited period of time, but it never remains in the house of a Kohen or a Levi forever. The only Malchus that's going to be a Malchus forever is going to be Malchus based off it. But there's one final idea that has to be expressed before we go further. Before we end. There's one page here where you have Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. And he takes us through the pasuk. It's number 9. Otur apon ki oz, cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, ve'evratam and their fury, for it is hard, achalkein b'yakov, I will divide them in Yaakov, v'afitzein b'Yisrael, and when I will scatter them in Israel. Very, very beautiful, what he says. First, I just want to see, there's a paragraph I just want to read, underlined. It is of the most profound importance that here at once, at laying the foundation of the Jewish nation, a curse is laid on any and every transgression of the laws of morality and justice, even if done in the interests of the public and the state. All other states and nations justify themselves by the principle that public and state interests sanctify everything. Cunning, trickery, and force, which in private life would be punished with prison and gallows, are rewarded with civic honors and medals. The laws of morality only exist for private life, but in politics and diplomacy, the only code recognized is the interests of the party or the state. And therefore, of course, if you can make millions of dollars dealing with Arafat, go right ahead. Unbelievable. Shemu Shemayim Alzaz. I couldn't help that. The original testament for the Jewish nation here lays a curse on all trickery and violence even if practiced for the most justified cause in the public interest. This one paragraph is just a beautiful paragraph of what ethics and morality in public life is all about, and perpetuates the teaching that even in public life and in the public interest, not only the end, but the means too must be pure. In no case does the end justify the means. All right? Now, he analyzes this pasuk. In this pasuk you have their anger and their fury is being cursed, and then it says four words. Achalkein b'Yakov v'afitzein b'Yisrael. Shem Shem V'Hirsh is beautiful here, and the fact is we can even find it, I'll show you quickly in some other portion. The word Yaakov is used, the name Yaakov and the name Yisrael. Achalkein and afitzein. There's a difference between Yaakov and Yisrael, and there's a difference between Achalkein and afitzein. The difference between Yaakov and Yisrael, Rav Shem Shem V'Hirsh says over here is, Yaakov represents the Jew in exile. Yisrael, the one who has returned to Eretz Yisrael and even prevails over the angel. Yisrael represents Malchus. Yisrael is the state of Yisrael. Achalkein and Afitzein. Afitzein is definitely a negative word. Afitzein means to be dispersed. Dispersed. Shattered apart. Olenapates, to shatter something is lenapates, shattered. Achalkein, by the way, happens to be a very positive word. Achalkein means a portion, a chelek. You get a portion of a pie, that's good, that's not bad. So Rav Shem Shem V'Hirsh says like this, there is a patriotism and a passion that Shimon and Levi have that is desperately needed by Klal Yisrael. You can't simply say these fellows are bad. They possess something that is so precious. All of Klal Yisrael needs a shtickle Shimon and Levi. But he says there's a difference. You know where Jews really need Shimon and Levi badly? Out in the Gola, out in the exile. The only way to survive is having this great passion, pride, patriotism for Klal Yisrael. You lose that, you disappear, you're finished. So he says, Achalkein, I'm going to apportion them out in Yaakov. Yaakov in the exile, this one is going to get a shtickle Shimon, and that one is going to get a shtickle Levi. This one is going to get the people that they need to maintain a sense of community strength and identity. But in Yisrael, where there's a Jewish state, the patriot, the passionate patriot, and I add, of course, who may someday act on his own, can be a danger to the state. In Yisrael, Afitzein, disperse them, disperse them. You have to make sure that they will never take unilateral action that may cause harm to the body politic as a whole. And a very beautiful pshat in Achalkein to Yaakov, Afitzein to Yisrael. And on the first page, the Netziv, there's a little Netziv, Achalkein to Yaakov. What Rav Shem Shem V'Hirsh writes in a whole page, the Netziv writes, Achalkein to Yaakov, it's underlined. Nitzlach leprakim ma'at anoshim keila. From time to time, you need such people. And of course, he must be reading this into the word achalkein, because achalek is always, you know, you deserve this portion. Avol rubam b'makam, but if you have a lot of these shimon and ladies, in one place, that's God, that's bad. Alkein, therefore, Alchalkein b'Yaakov, I'm going to apportion them out in Yaakov, Shiyu ma'at ma'at b'makom echad. Every place has to have a little bit of them. He's saying, of course, a little bit different than Rav Shem Shem V'Hirsh. Rav Shem Shem V'Hirsh says, Yaakov representing the exile. That means we need Jewish pride, we need people out there, yeah, out there who are going to maintain the level and maybe even intensify Jewish identity. But they're a danger. They're a danger in a state. Achalkein b'Yaakov here, the Netziv is saying simply that too much Shimon and Levi, bad. A little bit, you know, peppered, a Jewish community peppered with the Shimon and Levi's. That's a Jewish community. They're needed. You need them desperately. You cannot give kingdom into their hands, but you need them. The point therefore being that Yaakov, and by the way, what's very significant about this, one cannot assume that he simply on his deathbed is cursing them and leaving them with absolutely nothing to contribute to Klal Yisrael. So of course, first of all, we're pointing out that it is their anger and their fury that is being cursed. But more than that, what Yaakov Avinu is doing is he's going to make sure that all of the positive qualities of Shimon and Levi are going to be present in Klal Yisrael when Klal Yisrael needs it. And by the way, in the days of the Chashmonoim, we didn't need Matityahu Ubanav. What would have happened to Klal Yisrael if you wouldn't have them? And what would have happened if the Egel, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain and he says, Mila Shem Eli, who is it that's going to follow me? Who is it that gathers around him? The Shevet of Levi. There are times at which you need people that are going to go out there and do a job. And Shimon and Levi are the ones. What Yaakov Avinu is doing is he is now attempting to take the great power that Shimon and Levi possess within themselves and turn it into an absolute positive force for Klal Yisrael. And throughout history, it has been proven to be so. Yes?
And those two examples you gave were of Levi, the Egel Havraha and the Mina Shemedai.
Rashi says, the Melamdei Tanokas by Klal Yisrael was Shimon. That's how they were dispersed amongst Klal Yisrael. The teachers, the educators, they may not have been the ones that did great acts at one moment in history. Shimon is the one that's doing great acts in history all of the time. Melamdei Tanokos are from Shimon. Oh, finally fell for the question. And then Levim, he says, are the ones who are who live all over Eretz Yisrael. Shimon never had a portion of his own in Eretz Yisrael. He was part of Yehuda. And by the way, that was also very important. By being part of Yehuda, there was Yehuda who tempered him. But the teachers throughout Israel were Shimon. Melamdei Tanokos, Gemara says it and Rashi says it. Psak halacha yoru mishpotecho liyakov v'soros chol Yisrael. That was Levi. Psak halacha, poskim, teachers, gananot, principals, executive directors, came from Shimon.